words in papers, words in books, words on TV, words for crooks, words for...
Welcome to the world of Wordaholics. Yes, this is Wordaholics, the one-stop shop for those who have an ardor for adverbs, a passion for prepositions, and a weakness for peeping on pronouns with a telephoto lens. My name is Giles Brandreth, and I'm here with my thesaurus as your chairman, leader, commander, controller, ruler, chieftain, pontiff, monarch, sovereign. Yeah, yeah, that's the one. For the next half hour, I will be your sovereign. It is a state of affairs we have all dreamed of. Now, let's meet this week's Wordaholics. They are Richard Herring, Natalie Haynes, Jenny Eclair, and Alex Horn. Before we launch into the first round, I'd like to find out a little about the extent of our panelists' word addiction. I'm going to start with you, Richard Herring. What do you think is the single most beautiful word in the language, and why?
I don't know if it's exactly the most beautiful. I think one of my favourite words is ululate. It's kind of that onomatopoeic. It means sort of shouting and whooping and la 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 la. But it also looks pretty nice. It's like a vowel, consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel, consonant. It's got the T's and the L's. So it looks nice on the page. But I think
and
it's just a beautiful
word. You can see the epiglottis shaking.
Yeah, yeah.
The hills are alive with the sound of ululation. You're going to get a point for that. Natalie, the most beautiful word in the language.
Bed. Because, written down, it looks like what it is. If you have a particularly thick pen, comfy mattress. That's all I'm saying.
Jenny.
I like the word egg because I think it's the first word I ever learnt. You know when you're about three or four? No, let me say that again. You know when you're about one and you're learning to read? Egg is such a good word. It's nice to say, it's nice to look at, and it's nice to eat.
Alex Horn.
Well, there's a word which I'm particularly fond of. It's quite a long word, but it's quite elegant and quite sleek. It's got two meanings, which I think is always a good thing. And it's appropriate for my youth, because I was very lonesome. I felt very left out, mainly because of my height. I was very tall. I was the same height exactly as one of those tall, flightless African birds. I was ostrich-sized. That's about the level of contributions I'm going to make this evening. That level.
Excellent. You're going to get a point for that, but Natalie and Richard are definitely in the lead at this stage of the game as we move into our first round. Yes, this is the letter of the week. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome to the stage the sixth letter of the alphabet, the one and only letter F. Yes, here she comes, sweeping down the Wordaholics catwalk in all her finery. The letter F. Foxy, fruity, quite a filly. Look at her flowing across the floor. She's a consonant who knows she looks fabulous and isn't afraid to flaunt it. Isn't she a fine figure of a letter? Especially in her lowercase, curling up at both ends and sticking out in just the right places. Ladies and gentlemen, will you show your appreciation for the letter F? Richard Herring, the first question is for you. I have seen your act, so I know you're fond of F words. Can you tell me what would you be doing if you were flashing a tattler?
Sounds like something a posh streaker would do, doesn't it? I'm going to flash a tattler. I went out at Twickenham and I flashed my tattlers. Flushing a tattler might be what a posh person does if they run out of toilet paper. But... I mean, a tattler is someone who talks a lot.
Yes, no.
No.
It's an 18th century word, a tattler. It's not a person, it's an object, a useful object. It helps you see really where you are in terms of time.
Is it a watch?
It is.
Some kind of watch.
Yeah, I've helped you. Flashing a tattler is an 18th century term for wearing a watch. Now, this is for you, Natalie. We know she's sweet, but who was the original Fanny Adams?
Is it what Martin McGuinness calls Gerry Adams when they're just girls together? Is she a Bond girl?
No, she's earlier
like
than
Pussy
that.
Galore, but there's less of her.
No, she was a real person. She met a sticky end.
Oh, this she's a murdered child.
Well, she's a murdered victim. She was a young girl. She was murdered by a solicitor's clerk in the year 1810.
which led to both the familiar phrase, sweet F.A., and indeed to the public distrust of the legal profession, which has lasted until this day. It became nautical slang. Do you have any idea why?
No, Giles, I've never been to sea.
Ah. It's a bit grim. It's used pejoratively to describe rations of mutton given to sailors, which were rumoured to be the remains of poor Fanny Adams.
I'm surprised that she'd have been described as muttonish if she was a young girl, sweet, tender flesh.
Well, there you are.
That's taking a turn, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why it was sweet F.A. So sweet F.A. is nautical slang used pejoratively to describe rations of mutton given to sailors, which were rumoured to be the remains of poor, sweet Fanny Adams. Now, Jenny, let's come to you. What would you be doing if you were to claim a five-finger discount?
Five-finger discount. I know why you've asked me this, because I'm from South London, and you're tarring me with a brush, a South London brush, because it's about nicking stuff, isn't it?
It is about nicking stuff.
It's about half-inching.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I think you're in the right sort of area. Yes, it is. It is about daylight robbery.
It's nicking stuff.
It's shoplifting. It's a 20th century slang expression for shoplifting.
I was too depressed to get my purse out, honest. Yeah, I do a little bit of shoplifting. No, don't judge it. Don't shoplift. I prefer to steal things from friends. Because it's much easier. They let you in their house, don't you? And then you go in their bathroom, there's a little tube of very expensive moisturiser. Obviously, I'm going to have that, aren't
I?
You get a couple of points for that, because it's a completely correct answer. A five-finger discount is indeed shoplifting, something I have never done, actually, not in my wildest dreams, not even when I was dating Winona Ryder. Actually, that is not quite true. As a boy, I once stole a Kit Kat and gave it to a Cub Scout, which meant that I had a five-finger discount on a four-fingered chocolate bar in return for a three-fingered salute. And that was two fingers to the shopkeeper and one in the eye for Arkela. Okay, Alex Horn, what would you expect if I asked you to join me as we went flirty fishing?
I think I'd probably take you at your word and I'd expect just a nice little flirty fishing trip. I mean, I think we'd just go fishing. You'd show me your rod, I'd show you my my tackle, you'd show me your flies, I'd show you my harpoon. It would get very tedious. But I think this time you do mean what you say and you do want me and you in a boat just sort of winking.
You're now sailing out to Fantasy Island. This is contemporary United States slang. It really originated in the 1960s. And in fact, you and I would never be doing this because you have to be female to be doing
it. It's religious prostitution.
Well done. Richard Herring has got it in one.
Sending pretty girls out to convert men to Christianity, which I think that's in the New Testament, right?
Yes, if you were flirty fishing, you'd be a female, using your feminine charms to tempt men into joining a religious group. Richard gets the bonus there, and now we go to, well, this one. Anyone can buzz in on this one, if you know what this is, a French bath. Alex thinks he knows.
Is it just like a normal bath, but with tongues?
No, it isn't. Words fail me. My mouth is actually in retreat at the moment. It's got really very little to do with the French, but it has got something to do with a bath, or rather not a bath. It's a 19th century term, meaning the application of deodorant or perfumes instead of actually bathing.
Disguising the French, they're filthy, aren't they?
Well, it's interesting, you see.
Disguising their stench.
You see, there is a long tradition, Jenny, of us doing this, of using French offensively to make all sorts of slang terms. OK, I'm going to give you some quick-fire points now for anyone who can guess these, OK, drawn from various different eras of British linguistic history. French embassy, what's that?
A brothel.
Nope, not a brothel, Jenny.
I also think it's brothel.
But in your case, you might be right. It is indeed a gay bar. Well done, Alex. It's a gay bar. French ache.
Syphilis.
Syphilis, correct, Jenny Eclair.
Very good.
Congratulations. French marbles. Yes?
Bulls, I suppose. Is it bulls?
No, it's not...
Testicles.
Oh, please. I'll give you a clue. I remember playing French marbles with an exchange student, but fortunately, it all got cleared up with a shot of penicillin. Yep.
I think it was
syphilis, Richard, again.
It's syphilis again. Second point to you. You're having a marvellous run with syphilis. Congratulations, Jen.
Okay.
French Drive. What is French Drive? Alex thinks he knows.
No, I'm waiting for French toast. It's the only one. Just praying.
Is it the road from Berlin to Paris?
Oh. French Drive, it's a particularly bad shot in cricket. Piled high with French velvet. Alex thinks he knows.
Is it fat?
No, it's not fat. I think, Jenny, you really should get this one. Yes?
Is it syphilis? Syphilis.
It is syphilis again. Yay! So that brings us to the end of our Letter of the Week round, and as we give Lady F a cheeky little wave on her way, I can tell you that Natalie and Richard are well in front, though Jenny and Alex, thanks to that little run of syphilis, are bringing up the rear. Now, everyone is afraid of something or other. Arachnophobics are scared of spiders, agoraphobics fear wide open spaces, and the people of Chester are terrified that I might return to politics. This round is all about phobias. I'm going to give each of our wordaholics the name of a phobia, and we'll see if they can tell us what people with that phobia are frightened of. Jenny Eclair, we'll come to you first. What might you be suffering from if you have metrophobia?
Is it the fear of free newspapers? train stations? Is it very simply the fear of the underground?
Nope.
There should be a word
for
that.
No tube connections at all. In fact, no travelling connections unless you're travelling.
Is it to do with maths, metric? Is it to do with being scared of the metric system?
Well, the word metric or meter could help.
Oh, meter. You mean poetry, don't you?
I mean poetry. It's a fear of poetry. Oh. So you get the point, because metrophobia is a fear of poetry. And I used to be terrified of poetry. I only got over it when I moved next door to a young lady from Bude. Alex Horn, it's over to you. What would be your problem if you were suffering from linonophobia?
Linonophobia. Well, I guess it's just a fear of linonos. I guess it's just people... people are just, you know, just terrified of linonos. It's probably quite irrational, an irrational theory, because they're probably more scared than us, but, you know... there is a word, linum, which means flax.
Ah, you're there.
Fear of flax.
You're there. It is indeed a fear of flax or fear of string. I was terrified of string as a child. I couldn't have a yo-yo, just a round piece of wood that I'd occasionally drop on the floor. Now, we move on to Richard. Richard, can you possibly imagine what your fear would be if you were suffering from cacophobia?
Fear of using pub toilets?
The word that, horrible might help
yeah,
you.
Yeah, the world... The
We're into
of,
a grim, gruesome, unattractive world. The fear right. of...
The fear of ugliness.
The fear of Thank ugliness you. It is! All Congratulations! Right. Well done, that's brilliant. Do you know why cacophobia means that, Natalie?
Cacos is a bad thing. Kalos is good, cacos is bad.
Excellent. Much like television talent shows, new fears are being discovered every day, each more terrifying than the last. So to end this round, I'd like our wordaholics to suggest some new phobias and words that might describe them. Who shall we start with? Natalie, we'll start with you. A new phobia and the word that goes with it.
I am actually, in real life, properly mycophobic. I'm afraid of mushrooms, which is difficult if you're vegetarian, as I am. We eschewed meat for you here, and then a really big mushroom. And mushrooms, by the way, grow in the dark, evilly. And every now and then, a particularly snitty waiter is snitty with me because I'm afraid of mushrooms. The last time this happened to me was on the Isle of Wight. Don't judge me, it was for a christening. And I said, could I please not have mushrooms because I don't like them. In fact, technically, I'm afraid of them. And he gave me what can only be described as a snitty look. And literally the next day, a woman who had picked what she thought were mushrooms moments away from where I was eating in Ventnor died of fungal poisoning because mushrooms want you to die. Mycophobia, mushrooms will kill you. I'm not saying I've coined it. I'm just saying everyone should be aware. There was once a man on a flight allergic to mushrooms, and mushroom soup is being served. He goes, no mushroom soup for me, thanks for asking. And they go, okay, perfectly fine. It's stored above his head. It drips down on him and he nearly dies.
Jenny Eclair, what's your phobia going to be?
Oh, I've only got one, and it's true. I am very, very claustrophobic. I can't even wear a polo neck jumper. That's how bad I am. I get very panicky. But no, I don't have anything quite so esoteric as a fear of mushrooms. What is it when you're a mushroom fan?
It's inconceivable there could be such a word.
Alex, strike some fear into
us. Well, I think Jenny and I both slightly suffer from the fear of being put on the spot in a radio program. And you'd probably condense it to panel showbia. So you'd miss out the f, but panel showbia is a nice word, I think.
That's neat, panel showbia. Mm. Yes, finally, Richard, can you, any advance on that?
We have nothing to fear but fear itself and vampires. I think my main fear, and let's call it jobsophobia, is leaving my iPhone unchecked for 25 seconds in case I've got an important tweet. That is my main fear, so I'm really suffering. You can see I'm sweating here, my phone's in my pocket. Who knows what's come in there since we can't have a look. So, yeah, I'm sort of addicted to my iPhone, so...
The other thing I'm really scared of is, you know, when you're in a changing room in a department store or something and the curtain gapes and people walking past can see your thighs. What's that called?
Peepophobia.
Peepophobia. That's what I've got peepophobia.
That's it, and you're going to get a point for that.
Thank you.
Good, so it's the end of the round, and these are the scores. Jenny and Alex are... almost in the lead, but Natalie and Richard actually are. Well done, you two. Now, not in so many words. This is the round about saying it, but not saying it, about using the language to communicate the uncommunicable. Wordaholics, you can all help out here. Which well-chosen words would you use to tell a good friend that, however much they coo and bill and boast, their child is neither beautiful nor clever?
I think just telling the truth, just go, he's got his father's looks and his mother's brains. It sounds like a compliment.
I think you should say, if Brent's had a sort of hideously... You could say something positive like, have you thought about putting his name down for Tesco's?
Any advance on that?
Yeah, well, when we were children, my mother used to say of friends of ours that she didn't like that they were, and I quote, neither use nor ornament.
Alex Horn.
It is difficult. I have had two children recently, and it means you get into contact with all these other children, and I saw one recently and just was going, didn't know what to say. I was saying, he's... And then she said, she, which that's the part of the problem. The sex was wrong. And then what I tend to do is pick a word in my head which sounds a bit like a compliment. I normally go for consistent. He's very consistent, isn't he? Very consistent looking. And then I focus on a bit of the body like the knees. They're terrific knees. You get away with that. If you go on about the knees, very sturdy. Good back.
Actually, I prefer to play it safe, and I usually say, oh, he looks just like you. And the other one, which when they're really, really hideous, I sort of am self-deprecating and say, oh, look, I think he looks a little like me. And that's both flirtatious and accurate at the same time.
It's very creepy.
OK, I'm giving a couple of points to everybody there for being generally jocose, but obviously not very fond of children. Pastimes and professions often develop their very own languages and terminology. For example, in my experience, tabloid journalists have more than 200 words for scandal, but virtually no words at all for privacy. This round is called Terms of the Trade, and in it I will give our wordaholics a selection from the lexicon of a particular job, occupation, or pastime. And they'll have to guess what kind of person would use a word like that. For example, if I were to say fornication, racketeering, prostitution, you'd immediately reply with the Italian government. Okay. So let's see if our panel know what type of people might use these words.
Kisser, bodkin point, cock feather, flu flu.
Jenny Eclair thinks she knows.
It's to do with embroidery, needlework.
You're sort of close-ish. You've got a point. The point will help you move in the right direction. These are all words used by certain people who have it's a sport of some kind we're looking at.
Sports. Badminton?
Not badminton, no. It is a sport...
Archery!
Archery!
Who said that?
Alex, you said archery.
Yes, because you did that.
I did my impressive impression of...
Robin Hood.
It'd be an easier game if you just did the mimes.
These are all words used by archers. A kisser is a small button attached to the bowstring which the archer pulls towards his mouth to keep his aim straight. And a bodkin point is a short, sharp, pointed arrow. A cock feather is a differently coloured fletch or feather. And a flu-flu is an arrow designed to only travel short distances, the archery equivalent of EasyJet. Here's another batch of vocabulary.
Undines. Silver cord. Claire Augustine. Summerland.
Jenny.
Are they conservatories, like stars of conservatories, that a conservatory salesman might try and flog around the country?
No, we're not looking for a conservatory salesman. Interesting thought.
Sounds like the shops on Balham High Street to me.
I think they're probably cemeteries. They're always called things like Shady Acres and Summerland. It's just a field full of dead people.
These are terms used by people in their craft or the work that they do.
Are you going to do a mime?
I'm not going to do a mime because I don't need to hear. I can just think and you will know the answer.
Oh, so clairvoyant.
Congratulations. Well done, Alex Horn. You get the points. These are all terms to do with mediums and the psychic world, taken from the book So You Want to Be a Medium, which...
That's what I've been struggling to do my whole life.
Rather amusingly, it says on the front, this will be a Sunday Times bestseller. Undines, they're spirits connected to water, very prone to disruption, hence the old psychic expression, don't get your undines in a twist. The silver cord connects your consciousness with your body, as opposed to the silver scart lead, which connects the TV with the DVD player. And Claire Augustine is someone who can psychically sense aromas and tastes. And Summerland is a name used to describe the afterlife. It's a rebranding of heaven, Summerland. Like, it's happening all over the place now. I believe Kilburn is now called West Hampstead. Unlike the average Premiership footballer, language is ever-evolving. Words that were once used daily are soon forgotten and ignored. Words like yeks, pewdify, klegmania. In our next round entitled New Words for Old, I'm going to test our wordaholics to see if they can figure out the meaning of some words they probably won't have heard before. And a special guest dictionary is on its way up from the stacks to help us. I've been given the new dictionary for this week, and our guest dictionary today is... Oh, it's Sir George Cornwall Lewis's A Glossary of Provincial Words Used in Herefordshire and Some of the Adjoining Counties, 1839. Available from all good bookshops in 1839. So, Alex, I'm going to turn to you first. I'm flicking through the pages here, and I'm finding this word, cockshut.
Cockshut. You can be cocksure, you can be cockeyed, you can be cockney. My uncle was all three. Horrible. I'm going to say it's when the cockerel shuts up.
When you get to the cockerel, you're getting close, and certainly it does shut up, but not necessarily voluntarily. Does that help you?
Ah. When he's...
Yep.
Is it killed?
Yep. Well, it isn't necessarily killed. It's a sporting or hunting term, or maybe one used by poachers. A cockshut is a net used to catch a woodcock. And, of course, a woodcock is a wading bird like a heron, a stork, or Keira Knightley when her septic tank overflowed. I'm just trying to paint pictures with words. So that's a cockshut, and a couple of points go either side there. Richard, next. Tell me, what is taplash?
That might be a medieval punishment for inefficient plumbers, like a cat nine tails, but some taps on the end. Is it something to do with something like hair in the gate, a sort of tap lash, like an eyelash in a tap somewhere, like a beer tap with an eyelash in it?
A beer tap with an eyelash in it?
Someone's got an eyelash has fallen into the beer. You need a word for that, because that happens a lot.
Hugely close.
Beer tap.
I mean, you've stumbled on this.
Tap splash, back splash.
You're virtually there.
Well, something bad...
Bad beer.
Bad beer. Bad beer.
Bad beer. Okay. I'm going to give you three points there because you actually came to it.
Yes. Okay.
I mean, you know, the tap house is the ale house, and indeed, taplash, according to Sir George Cornwall Lewis, is a bad small beer, or indeed the refuse or dregs of liquor. Of course, taplash is also an ailment you receive from standing up too quickly in the bath. Okay, Natalie, can you tell me what a pulfin might be?
Is it a cross between a puffin and a dolphin. Dolphin.
It's an amusing answer, but
is it?
It didn't occur to
us. Can it balance a ball on its nose and be a little feathery mascot at the same time?
No, it's a description of a person, not of an individual, but of a type of person. A pulfin, anybody got an idea? It's a personal description of a...
It's a cross between a muffin.
A muffin will take you there, an excess of muffins.
Fat person.
Well done, Jenny. Well done.
Well done, Jenny.
An excess of muffins will make you a large, fat child. And that's what a pulfin was.
Yeah.
A large, fat child. England is now full of these. And truth will out, a pulfin is actually, I think, rather a delightful word for a large, fat child. And look at any pictures of me, in fact, as a boy, and I'm sorry to say, you'll see a large, fat child. No idea who he was. He just always turned up in these family photographs. Jenny, for you, I have Giglet.
Is it a girl piglet? Giglet. Oh, it could be, you know, like pikelet is like a sort of crumpety thing. Is it a food stuff? Is it a... No. I think it is something to do with laughing.
It is something to do with laughing. Small laughing from a small person.
Is it a fat laughing child? A pulfin...
A pulfin could well do this. A female pulfin might well be doing this.
Oh, so it's a laughing girl.
It's a laughing girl. A giglet is a giddy laughing girl.
A giddy girl.
And I've had a lot of experience of giglets in my time. Women who just, you know, around me just can't help giggling, or at least laughing and pointing. So that's a giglet. And well done, that gives you an extra point. And goodness, on that outburst of colourful language, it brings us to the end of the show. And I see from my score sheet that this week's winners are not Natalie and Richard. Oh. They were almost, but 3 points ahead of them are Jenny and Alex. Congratulations. Neither of you needs a bonus now, but you could earn one if you could describe your experience of Wordaholics between you in just one word.
I need two words. Badly paid.
I was very well paid, wasn't I? I got loads. Gut-wrenching or mind-blowing? Like a combination, like mind-wrenching. Gut-blowing.
Gut-blowing, that's great. What do you feel about where you are now, you two, Richard?
Syphilitic.
It is syphilitic.
Syphilitic. Well, a little dose of penicillin afterwards, that's nice, and that will sort out your problems. So, congratulations to our winners, and as for the other two, well, to be honest, words fail me, except for the word losers. So, well done. That brings us to the end of this week's Wordaholics, a final hurrah for our outstanding guests, Richard Herring, Natalie Haynes, Jenny Eclair, and Alex Horn. Till next time, goodbye.
You've been listening to Wordaholics, chaired by Giles Brandreth. Tracy Wilde is the reader. It's written by John Hunter and James Heckel. And the producer is Claire Jones.